The following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcast Network. For advertising information or to find more great podcasts, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com and follow us on Twitter at @RealTheUnderdog.
Yeah, welcome to another episode of Get Paid, your one-stop shop for all things fantasy gambling and daily fantasy. We are proud partners of Underdog Podcasts. You can also find us on Podcast One. You can also find us streaming on YouTube at youtube.com/theunderdog. This is a special edition today. We already did our game previews. What I'm doing now is taking a handful of these games and doing deep dives into them. Key analysis for the games themselves, and of course, the full fantasy football projections for all of these key players in each of the matchups. On this episode, we are going to be doing Baltimore versus the Rams on Monday Night Football. We're going to be doing Green Bay versus San Francisco, and we are going to be doing Seattle versus Philadelphia. If you want more, we do have more on the YouTube channel. Once again, you can find them at www.youtube.com/theunderdog. I believe we have Oakland versus the Jets, Denver versus Buffalo, and a couple more, so check those out. For now, we will start with the Baltimore Ravens versus the LA Rams. But let's go ahead and get rolling now with the key injuries to the Rams and the Ravens. You can see the Rams, they have a couple wide receivers and a right tackle, their offensive line, which has been banged up and hasn't been playing particularly well this year, this offensive line. They've come over under some criticism. But you see Woods and Cooks, I think they'll both end up playing, and then we'll see about the tackle. For the Ravens, you have basically a backup wide receiver. The nose tackle is an important one, but nobody's doubtful. Nobody's been ruled out yet. So the key players as of today are in the game, and as well as you could be, I guess, at this point in the NFL season. The next thing I like to do is compare the offensive and defensive units, and I put, you know, passing offense versus passing defense and vice versa, just to get an idea of where these teams are at this point in the season. And these rankings are in terms of yards accumulated. You see the Rams offense ranks 8th in the passing game versus the 18th ranked passing defense for the Ravens. The Ravens passing offense is 20th versus the 15th ranked passing defense for the Rams. Again, it's in yards accumulated. Now, with as efficient as Lamar Jackson has been, do I think that the Ravens are the 20th best passing team? I wouldn't say that. I would say they're better than that. But given how successful they have been on the ground, I think that pushes their passing, yardage accumulation artificially low. I don't think it's a real good barometer of where they're at as an offense. I've said these about other teams as well that are really good at running the ball. If you don't have to pass, then your passing yards aren't going to be as much as possible, okay? Then you look at the run game. The running offense for the Rams is 20th versus the 7th ranked running defense for the Ravens. And then no surprise there, the Ravens have the best running offense behind Ingram, Edwards, and Lamar Jackson versus the 5th ranked running defense for the Rams. So basically, if you're looking at the way these two teams stack up, I think it's pretty interesting. So I think the Rams defense is fit to try to slow down the Ravens running game. However, the Patriots are a better run defense than the Rams are, and we saw what the Ravens did to the Patriots. So will they neutralize? Will they completely stop the Ravens rushing? Well, if we're just talking about Ingram and Edwards or whoever the running backs are, I would say that the chances are pretty decent. But once you factor in a guy like Lamar Jackson, who can just make things happen on the ground, then all of a sudden that defensive line stretches. There are more holes to run through. It's very, very difficult to defend. On the passing side, I think the Rams with Jalen Ramsey are certainly better since they made that move. But the Ravens are efficient. The thing with the Ravens, though, is they're not taking a lot of over the top shots. They're kind of moving the ball with tight ends, and just basically the teams have to respect the run game so much that there are some avenues open. And we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. The Rams, they have to get the ball running, but again, we can talk about that in a little bit. Now, what I call key analytics or the gambler stats. If you're not an NFL better. What they do is they basically look at a few of the key things first. Now, there's always a secret sauce that gets much more in many more details than this, but at a high level, you look at yards per play, how efficient is your offense or defense, yards per play given up. You look at situational football like third down percentage, fourth down percentage, and red zone touchdown percentage, not scoring, but touchdown. How, once you get in the red zone, can you stay on the field on third down? You get in the red zone, can you punch it into the end zone? That's very important. Then you look at turnover margin and penalty yardage. So if you compare all of these, you see that the Rams get offensively 5.7 yards per play. The Ravens defense gives up 5.6 yards per play, although I will say as of late, they've been getting better and better. Now, you look at the Ravens offense, 6.4 yards per play, it's a lot. Compared to the Rams defensive yards per play, 4.8, that's you know, pretty few. I mean, both of these teams offensively get more than they give up. That's good. And they do it by a wide margin, but you have to give the yards per play just based on how powerful this offense is. You'd have to give a little bit of an advantage there towards the Baltimore Ravens. I would have said the same is the case with the offensive, you know, the passing units versus the defensive passing units and so on and so forth. What we saw in the last graphic there, I think, again, it lines up for the Ravens. You look at situational football, third down percentage offensively for the Rams, 35.9%. Conversions on third downs. That's bad. And you see this, there's generally, as I've been doing these videos, you kind of notice the good running teams are good on third down and fourth down and red zone touchdown percentage. The teams that can't get the run game going, they're more run dimensional. Well, you know what? If you can't run the ball, you end up finding yourself in a lot of third and longs most of the time. It doesn't go well for them. So you see the Baltimore Ravens get off the field 40% of the time. Then you look at the offensive third down conversions. I would have expected a little bit higher, but 49.1%, it's almost half the time they're converting third downs. That's pretty solid. And actually the Rams defense on third downs is pretty good. Then you see the Ravens on fourth down, they're pretty ridiculous. The Rams are not. So, you know, if he gets into a situation where you're trying to extend drives at the end of the game, like if Baltimore is losing to the Rams late in the game or vice versa, I would say that favors the Ravens once again. Then you look at the all-important offensive red zone touchdown percentage. The Rams, when they get to the red zone, are pretty efficient at 60%. And then you see the Ravens are also pretty efficient, pretty darn efficient at 65%. Two-thirds of the time they get in the red zone, basically, they get a touchdown. And then you look defensively, the Ravens are better stopping touchdowns than the Rams are. Okay, so, you know, all this stuff is stacking up. You see penalty yardage is about even. They're both very well-coached teams and disciplined, so no surprise there. And the turnover margin, even though the Rams are on the negative side, it's fairly close. It's within a possession there. So, again, if you look at this just on paper, just analytically, the Ravens should win this game. I believe they're favored by about 3.5 points. And that seems... that seems a little low to me. I would expect that to be about 4.5 or 5 based on just the analytics here. But it's going to be very interesting. Let's take a look at the game plan for the LA Rams and how can they win. And the first note there is stop being cute. I've been saying this and banging the drum now. I'm a little biased, to be honest with you, because I have both Jared Goff and Todd Gurley on my fantasy team. But Todd Gurley, you know, you can make the argument that he's lost a step. I personally don't believe it. I think that the only difference between the Rams and Gurley this year, even if he has lost a little bit of a step or a half a step, the big difference is that they're not committing to the run. They're rotating him out on series. He's a volume running back. He always has to get volume to be good. And, you know, everybody looking at Todd Gurley, just remember Jeff Fisher's last season. How good was Todd Gurley that year? How good was Jared Goff that year, right? When you go away from the run and you rotate in a Malcolm Brown or a Henderson or whatever, it's going to hurt the flow for Todd Gurley. He needs to be more involved. He had been more involved the last 2 years for the Rams. I'm sick of it. And I'm sure Rams fans are probably sick of it too. I'm sick of hearing about the offensive line. Just run the stupid ball like they did last week against the Chicago Bears. They gave him 25 carries, and what do you know? They win by 10 points, okay? Cooper Kupp, I think you need to use him in the seam routes. I say, look at that. That's a little bit of a mental kind of gaffe there. I said Ed Reed. It's not Ed Reed. It's Earl Thomas, but basically the very, very talented field general back in the free safety area. You use Kupp, you need to occupy him, and you need to use him in the deep seam so that things can open up underneath him. I don't love Cooks in this game in terms of projections. I think Robert Woods will have a pretty decent projection, but Cooper Kupp, you need to run him, even if he's just a decoy route all game, although I do think he'll have a nice game. You need to occupy Earl Thomas. It's not Ed Reed. It's Earl Thomas, okay? Get the ball out of Jared Goff's hands quickly. You know what? We saw it against the Pittsburgh, against the Pittsburgh Steelers offense. If he's hit early and often and they're trying to have Goff throw the ball 50 times against the Ravens, it's not the recipe for success. Get the ball out of his hands quickly. That would mean throwing the ball, by the way, to Todd Gurley. That would mean throwing quickly to Kupp, you know, and maybe on some wide receiver screens and that kind of stuff. Get the ball out quickly so that you can take the deep shots, occupy this defensive line. And then one more time for emphasis, Todd Gurley, all night long. I don't care what the score is. You need to integrate him. If you need to pass, fine. Use him in a screen game. And stop with the Malcolm Brown stuff, by the way. If you want to rotate another running back in, use Henderson. That's what you drafted him for. That's what his skill set is. He can take, you know, screen passes to the house. I don't like what the Rams are doing with their personnel. I just don't. I haven't for weeks. When they commit to Todd Gurley, they generally win. And that's been the case now for, what, 3 years, two and a half, I guess. So enough with that stuff. Enough with that stuff. So for the Ravens, you know, I'm going to start with the last point on this graphic first. Just stop Todd Gurley. I was saying it, the key to success for the Rams is to get Todd Gurley going early and often. If the Ravens stop Todd Gurley, I think that's the game right there. I think that's the cover and the spread. I think the Ravens win easily if that happens. But, you know, moving up top, the Rams haven't played a mobile quarterback, I think, since they played the Seattle game, which, by the way, I think it went to overtime, or maybe Greg the Leg missed a field goal at the end of it was a close game. I think it was at the end of regulation. He missed a field goal that would have won. But long story short, the Rams are very good defense, very fast defense, but they haven't seen anything like Lamar Jackson yet. I think you can use him. It always makes me nervous because I remember the RG3 years in Washington very, very closely. It always makes me nervous to run the quarterback, but that will work and that will loosen up this strong defense. You know, get him on the ground. I think that'll help. Running with Ingram and Edwards is fine, but I think both will find some room in the screen game as well. Marquise Brown, I like him as an over-the-top threat. The problem is he hasn't been playing a ton of snaps. They haven't really been making him an emphasis. I don't know if he's still banged up or if it's maybe just the flow of the game's getting off, but I'd like to see him run the top off of the defense, and I think things will open up underneath, you know, for a Snead or a Boykin, and certainly the tight ends there. Let's see. Andrews, I think he'll have a field day. I think Boyle could actually have a very nice day as well. But again, I think that over-the-top thing needs to happen. Maybe they match up Jalen Ramsey against Marquise Brown. Don't worry about it. You know, let Hollywood Brown, man. Let him run. Let him run. Use his speed. Get down there. Take some shots. Even if, like I've been saying this in some of the other videos, even if, you know, Lamar Jackson on purpose, you throw it 5 to 10 yards over his head, just take the shot so that the defense has to respect it. And then again, that last point, if you stop Gurley, I think good things will happen for the Baltimore Ravens. Let's finish this out now with some fantasy football projections. Okay, now I know there are some guys questionable. Of course, make sure to make sure that these guys are going to be playing, but I'm just going to assume that they all are. Jared Goff at a 16.3, that is a sit. Todd Gurley at a 12.44. Let me say this, that is a start, but it's not a touchdown. Todd Gurley needs to find the end zone for the Rams to win. I think he will outplay this projection. You know, he certainly needs that. Malcolm Brown at 4.71, that's a sit. Brandon Cooks, Woods, Kupp, if they all play, you know, I think they're all starts with, you know, Woods and Kupp being the likeliest to get in the end zone. Gerald Everett, I don't love this week. That's kind of a fringe on the bottom side of the starting for me. I think you can find better off of the waivers. And then the defense and special teams at 6.7. I think they're going to have a tough time. Baltimore's offense is very, very good. Now, if we look at the Ravens fantasy football projections, Lamar Jackson's a start every week. You know he is at a 20.19. That's a nice projection. He'll get you plenty of rushing yards, I think, this game too. Now, I think the Rams will do well defensively against the Ravens, but I don't think you can completely contain the Ravens at this point. They're just playing too well. Mark Ingram at a 13.46. I think he finds the end zone. Gus Edwards at 5.48 is an eh. You know, I wouldn't start him. Brown, 9.93. That's, I mean, I guess a reasonable one, but you can see I don't love the projections anyway. I should say Rockobot, my computer projections, don't love Boykin and Snead. If you're a daily fantasy player, I like Boykin as a or Snead if that's your preference, but I like one of these guys to have a nice game underneath and just work kind of like seam routes and posts, that middle of the field a little bit over where the tight ends would usually catch the ball. I like those guys as a possible daily fantasy super budget play. Mark Andrews, like I said, I think he'll get in the end zone. Boyle could also get in the end zone. These, you know, multiple tight ends for the Baltimore Ravens are very good. In defense and special teams, I like what they're doing. And then I also like the matchup because Goff has been struggling so much. Again, if they can stop Gurley, I think this is an easy Ravens victory. And we're back. And I just want to talk a little bit about betonline.ag. I love them. They're one of my my favorite sports books out there for sure. NFL, college, football, NBA action, it's all underway. Hockey, if that's your thing, that's out there. And you know what? You know, the beauty about the MLB season, if you're an MLB fan, is that that's not too far around the corner either. I mean, we're only probably, 2 months away from catchers reporting again. So it's all coming back soon. Visit our good friends and exclusive partners of Podcast One at betonline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code PODCAST1 for that 50% welcome bonus. The games are great this week. My three favorite are the ones I'm talking about today, the LA Rams and the Baltimore Ravens, the Eagles and the Seahawks. It's a huge one for playoff implications. And then, of course, you have the San Francisco 49ers versus the Green Bay Packers. A lot of teams that are vying for playoffs are in the game. Basically, these are the hugest ones. You got to get into it. Once again, everybody, visit betonline.ag. Don't forget that promo code. It's podcast1 for your 50% welcome bonus. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And let's go ahead and just swing us now to the Green Bay Packers versus the 49ers game plan video. Now, let's start, as I always do, with the key injuries, and I have to laugh. You know, I've done a few of these for the 49ers so far this season. Do you notice a disparity? Do you notice an inequity in the injury report? It's crazy. The 49ers, as good as they are, as good as their record is, they've been this banged up for like 2 months. It's insane. This 49ers team, we have not even seen the best of them yet. That's why I have them ranked so highly in my my power rankings that I release on Tuesdays. But look, you know, the Packers, Davante Adams, no surprise there, you know, with his issue. He's his turf toe and everything. He's just going to be on the injury report for most of the rest of the season. The 49ers, you got Sanders, Samuel, their two best receivers. You got George Kittle, arguably their, you know, one of their three best receivers or their best receiver, but also a great tight end, very useful in the running game as a blocker as well. Matt Breida, their running back, he's questionable, by the way. Joe Staley's out again. You got D Ford, huge player for them, doubtful. It's just, even their kicker's questionable, for crying out loud. I mean, it's unfortunate, but you know what? At this stage of the season for the 49ers, they don't have to be healthy. It's about getting healthy for the playoffs. And when this team is full, I just, as a football fan, I can't wait to see what this team's like when they're at full strength. The Packers are playing very well. They're the healthier team coming in. Obviously, that is an advantage for the Green Bay Packers, and I would say a heavy advantage based on some of the names on that list for San Francisco. Now, let's look at the key statistics, the key stats. These are in terms of yards accumulated throughout the season, okay? So you got the Packers. Their pass offense is ranked 11th versus the first-ranked pass defense for the 49ers. The pass offense for the 49ers is 15th. They've been climbing the ladder as of late. Garoppolo to Sanders to Samuel, all that stuff, it's been working well for them. They're 15th. The pass defense for the Packers is 23rd. You compare the run. Run offense for the Packers, 18th. Run defense for the 49ers, 20th. And then, no surprise there, the second-ranked run offense for the 49ers versus the 25th-ranked run defense for the Packers. I have to say, in terms of yardage, what these offenses and defenses are doing, I have to give a pretty strong advantage, in my opinion, to the San Francisco 49ers here. You know that the 49ers are going to be able to move the ball. Again, injuries notwithstanding. And as I've said, San Francisco has been that banged up for most of the season. They've still made it work. You know, they have weapons basically everywhere. They're building quite a program, quite a team in San Francisco. Now, let's look at the key analytics, what I call the gambler stats. Long story short, people that bet for a living on the NFL, they look at some of these key things first before going into whatever their system is. It's yards per play, situational football, third and fourth down percentage, how good are you in the red zone, and then you know, your discipline, you know, what are your turnovers, what are your penalty yardage. So quickly, if we look through, look at the Packers in the first two that yards per play, the offense and the defense of the Packers. They gain 5.8, they give up 6.0. They're a net negative 2. Okay, that's weird to see a team as good as the Packers record-wise to be negative in the net yardage category there. That's interesting, okay? San Francisco, they give up 4.5 yards per play. Very good. I think only like maybe New England is better. They're very good on yards per play. Offensively, honestly, I'd expect them to get more than 5.6 yards per play. I would have expected them to be more towards the 6 area. Again, just kind of as a fan and what I've seen. So interestingly that they're that low. However, they do have a net of 1.1 yards between their offense and their defense. And if you compare these teams, you have to give a pretty strong advantage to San Francisco. They're going to be able to gain more yards per play consistently throughout this game. You know, this is a tried and true metric in football. So if you see this and you don't buy it, I'm sorry, it's the truth. San Francisco will be, throughout the game, be able to move the ball more than the Packers will be able to move the ball. So then we move on to situational, okay? How are they on third and fourth down? Well, you see the Packers, surprisingly, again, I would expect this number to be higher for a team with as good of a record as Green Bay's. 37.2% on third down, that's not great. That's borderline bad. They need to step that up for sure, especially against a strong 49ers defense who only give up first downs 30% of the time when it's third down. So their defense is very good. You'd see on the defensive side of the ball, the Packers are more where you'd expect, the 49ers are more where you would expect a one-loss team to be at that 47% third down percentage success rate on offense. The Packers defense isn't bad, but 40%. That's not a bad number at all. Fourth down conversion, 0% for the Packers, which is kind of nuts. The 49ers get off the field basically 85% of the time. They only give up first downs on a fourth down attempt 15% of the time. That's low. That is very low. And then they get first downs 50% of the time compared to the 40%. So again, situational football, yards per play, both I think heavily towards San Francisco. You look at red zone percentage, San Francisco can punch the ball in the end zone 50%. This is where the Packers are really earning their money at this point, their coaching staff. They're scoring more than two-thirds of the time when they get into the red zone. Okay, and they're going to need to keep that up against San Francisco. But you can see San Francisco's defense only give up 40%. Green Bay's defense gives up 48%. I give the advantage in the red zone. The 49ers are taking more field goals, and the Packers are forcing the issue a little bit more, and they are going to have to on Sunday, believe you me. Turnover margin, I think they're both very good at it. The Packers, obviously, a slight edge there. That's good. Penalty yardage, both of these are fairly low for NFL averages, so they're both pretty well-coached teams, I think. They're very disciplined. So, again, yards per play, the general statistics, I would give the advantage going into this game to the San Francisco 49ers just in terms of the analytics. But let's dig into the game plan. Let's dig into the tactics. What do the Packers have to do? What is their path to victory? Well, Aaron Jones needs to get rolling. Okay, so San Francisco's pass defense, I've been saying this since early in the season, their pass rush is crazy. Their defensive line is as fast as I've seen any defensive line. They're very talented. They've been talented for a while, but then you add Bosa to it this year as a rookie, and they just go to another level. Yes, I know D Ford is hurt. That doesn't help, but they have depth. Okay. So, how do you neutralize that? You got to get the run game going, because you can't go one dimensional too early. You can't have Aaron Rodgers, even though he has a quick release, even though he's athletic and he can break the pocket. You can't have this defensive line just pinning their ears back and rushing at the quarterback, from the halfway through the first quarter through the end of the game. It's just going to be too much. You have to neutralize them. You have to keep them honest in the run game. The Packers, they need to find somebody opposite Devontae Adams. Okay. We've been talking about Valdez Scantling. We've been talking about Geronimo Allison. I don't know. Is it? I think his name's Alan. Is Lazard? I think it's Alan Lazard. There. I think when I watch the Packers games, I think that he is the second best receiver in this offense when I see him. So I want to see him get more opportunities. Maybe Green Bay coming off a bye week that will help him get further integrated. But they need somebody else, because if it's just Devontae Adams in this game, I'm sorry, the 49ers pass defense is too good. I don't think you can ever shut Adams and Rodgers down completely, but you can limit him. And if Devontae Adams is limited, and he's already limited based on his injury, does not bode well for the Packers, okay? Jimmy Graham, wake him up. I don't know if he's hibernating. I don't know if he's been mummified. You need to wake him up, exhume his body, and have him play kind of like he played when he was with the Saints. They need to find another weapon offensively. It's that simple. Situationally, I mentioned third down before. If they can't get third downs, they're going to have to roll the dice. I do think that Green Bay, and the last comment here before I kind of move on, Green Bay, they're the 25th ranked run defense versus the second ranked run offense for San Francisco. We know what's coming. San Francisco is going to try to establish the run. They've been successful throughout most of the season. It's not rocket science, everybody. We can all see it coming from a mile away. This defensive line better be ready. Now, what's going into the Packers' favor? They are coming off a bye week, so they've had 2 weeks to prepare for this game, and they have the health. Okay, so if this were any given Sunday, both teams at full strength playing in a neutral field, I would probably give the San Francisco 49ers maybe a 5-point advantage. Okay, they open up the game. They're at home, but I think they were 3.5-point favorites. I'm leaning towards San Francisco, even with the injuries, because I think they'll be able to establish the run. Green Bay needs to stop it. Let's talk about San Francisco's path to victory. I mentioned it's running, right? Pound the ball with Coleman, rotate your backs in. You can also get, Mostert, tomato, tomato. You can also get him and Breida, if Breida's healthy enough to play, involved in the screen game, you'll be able to get yards. Kittle, I really hope he plays, for the sake of San Francisco 49ers. Again, I'm not a fan of either team. I just a fan of the NFL. And as a fan of the NFL, I want to see Kittle play. I think this is a great matchup for him. He's big in the run game, and he's huge in the passing game. I think he could find the end zone twice, honestly, this week. With the ground game established, Sanders and Samuel, if they can play, because they're also injured, they're going to have some over-the-top shots. I think it's going to be... I think it's going to be a healthy dose. Let me look at my notes here. Okay. I think it's going to be healthy dose of conservatism early and deep shots. I think they can just run the ball, you know, move the chains with Kittle if he can be healthy, and then take your deep shot over the top. And I think that'll work just all game long. You know, bottle up Aaron Jones. I mentioned, you know, if you can make Green Bay one dimensional earlier in the game, that's only going to help your defensive, you know, line get to the rush. And if you do that, Rodgers takes care of the ball. But, you know, if there's any way you're going to force Aaron Rodgers to create turnovers, it's hitting him while he throws the ball. So I think that's your recipe there. And then lastly, San Francisco, I mentioned they have the advantage here. Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't mind an interception if he's throwing the ball deep to Samuel or, you know, Bourne, if, you know, if Samuel or Sanders can't go. You know, I don't mind the deep, you know, 50 yards downfield, he throws an interception. It's kind of like a punt. But just take care of the ball situationally, you know, inside, you know, on your side of the 50-yard line, don't turn the ball over. Don't let Green Bay flip the field, because I think they're going to have to. I think Green Bay is going to have to be the aggressor in this game. San Francisco, home field advantage. You know, the running game, all the analytics line up. So if you take care of the ball, good things will happen. Let's move it and finish this video now with the betting, or I'm sorry, the fantasy football analytics. RoccoBot is my is what I named my my fantasy football algorithm that I built. But I have Aaron Rodgers as a fringe start. Aaron Jones is a definite start. I think he'll have success this week, both on the ground and through the air. Jamal Williams, I don't like. Usually I do. I don't like him this week. Davante Adams is a yes, assuming he can play. And you can see right there, I mean, the disparity with the other receivers. Valdez Scantling and Allison are both on the bench as far as I'm concerned. I need to see something else. Jimmy Graham also needs to find some vintage Jimmy Graham, or maybe they need to rotate somebody else in there. And the defense and special teams I don't like for Green Bay this week. They're a strong unit, but I don't like them this week. San Francisco, what do they look like? I think Garoppolo is a fringe start, but I think this is more about the running game. That's a typo. Tevin Coleman's more at 15.72, not a 5.72, so he's a definite start. Burita, I think, is also a definite start. I think he'll have some opportunities in the passing game. Now, if he can't go, obviously that's Raheem Mostert, okay? Then you got Emmanuel Sanders, Deebo Samuel. I think that they can outplay these projections because I think they will have deep shots. I think they'll have big yardage accumulation. Whether or not they get in the end zone, I don't know, but I think they're both certainly worth playing in daily fantasy. And if you need somebody on your bottom flex, I actually have Deebo Samuel in my lineup this week, again, assuming he plays. George Kittle, you know, 17. Like I said, I think he's going to get in the end zone. He could get in the end zone twice. And the defense and special teams, RoccoBot really loves the 49ers. I think that's the second best defensive projection from RoccoBot. I like the 49ers this week. What can I say? I think analytically they match up well, but you know, don't discount the fact that Aaron Rodgers, first of all, is on that team and he's amazing. Don't discount the fact that Green Bay's coming off a bye week, so they've had 2 weeks to prepare. And don't discount the fact that Green Bay's the healthier team. That matters, especially when teams are this talented playing with each other. I'm going to say final score, it's going to be something like you know, San Francisco, I'm going to say maybe 27, Green Bay 20, somewhere in that area. Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. And okay, we're back, but let's end it now with Seattle Seahawks versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Huge game for the playoffs. Let's join the game plan. But let's dig in as I always do. We'll start with the key injuries for the Seahawks and the Eagles. You see, a lot of people are on the injury report. I tend to think most of these guys for both teams will play just because they're all questionable here. But you have Lockett, Dwayne Brown, Mikey Potty, let's see, Clowney, Reed, Jefferson. You know, some key guys, but again, I think they'll play. Same with the Eagles. You have Jordan Howard, Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Agholor, Peters and Lane Johnson. Both the tackles are banged up, and that's going to be a big deal, obviously. But let's dig in now to the key stats. And now these are in terms of yardage accumulations, and I like to put position group against their competition. So you see in the first row there, you see the Seattle Seahawks pass offense is ranked 10th in the league in yards accumulated versus the 17th ranked Eagles passing defense. Now the Eagles have the 24th passing offense versus the 28th passing defense for Seattle. So very interesting there. You know, I would give probably the slight, very slight advantage to Seattle there, but I was surprised to see how low below the Seattle Seahawks are in terms of yards given up through the air. Then you look at the run offense versus run defense for the Eagles. I don't think there are any surprises there. Seattle likes to run, and Philadelphia is excellent at stopping the run. I think it's the strength of this Eagles team. Then you look at the run offense for the Eagles, their 11th, which I was surprised. I thought they would actually be lower. So good for the Eagles for being that high. I know they just added Ajayi back to their roster too. The Seattle Seahawks run defense is 12th. So in terms of, advantages, based on just these statistics, I got to say they're fairly even. Can Philadelphia, take advantage of the 28th ranked passing defense? We'll see. That's going to be one of the keys, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Now, the key analytics, what these are and what I call them better stats, is for people that bet professionally against the NFL, although they look at a long list of things, they usually like to start with yards per play, key situational football, third and fourth down percentage, how often can you score a touchdown when you get into the red zone, and then what are your turnover and penalty yardage, okay? So it's basically how efficient is your offense, how good are they at staying on the field, and once they get all the way down to the end, can they punch it in the end zone, or are they taking field goals? Okay, so let's compare the Seattle Seahawks versus the Philadelphia Eagles here. Seattle gets 5.9 yards per play. That's pretty good, but the Eagles defense is, fairly strong there at only giving up 5.3 yards per play. On the other side, the offensively, Philadelphia gains 5.1 yards per play. So if you look at their offense versus defense, they're actually at a minus net 2 yards. That's not so great. Seattle, though, they give up 5.9, so they're at a net zero. They give up as many as they gain. Neither of these teams has a particularly strong metric on either of these stats. You give the slight advantage, I think, to the, and I mean very slight advantage to Seattle there, just based on averages. You look at third down conversion and fourth down conversion, I gotta say they're pretty darn similar. Seattle gains a little bit, gains a little bit less third downs. Philadelphia is a little bit better on third downs. And then that, the same is true, I think, on defensively. The Seattle gives up a little bit less, but Philadelphia is pretty good there. So both teams, I think, are sound on third downs. I wouldn't give really an advantage. They're pretty close in there, in my opinion. Fourth down is very, I guess it goes more towards Seattle at this point. They gain more in fourth downs. They convert half. Philadelphia gives up more than half in terms of conversions there. So you give the slight advantage. Basically, if a team is playing from behind in the fourth quarter, can they stay on the field? Seattle's a little bit better at that than Philadelphia is at this point in the season. Then you look at red zone percentage. Seattle scores a touchdown more than 2/3 of the time when they get in the red zone there. Philadelphia scores 62% of the time, so no slouches by any means, but just not quite as good as Seattle. And then Seattle's defense is a little bit better than Philadelphia's. So again, by the tiniest of hairs here, I give the advantage probably there to Seattle. Turnover margin, obviously Seattle, they're in plus 0.6, whereas Philadelphia is minus 0.2. I don't think it's an egregious difference, but it is one worth noting. And then you see penalty yards is pretty darn close there. So let's look at the path to victory before we get to the fantasy football projections for each team. Look, the strength of this Philadelphia Eagles defense is their run defense, but the strength of the Seattle Seahawks offense, although they have Russell Wilson, who is probably number two at this point in my MVP race behind Lamar Jackson at this point, Russell Wilson is very, very good. I think, though, that Seattle's going to have to get this run game established, and they will work to do that. They're very patient with it. I do think that Seattle will run, and they need to just stick with it, even if they're not getting results early. I don't think they need to go straight to the pass game. But if they do, Philly's pass defense, they've improved as of late. They started the year slow. In the last three or four games, they've actually been playing pretty well. But here's the thing. With Josh Gordon on this team coming off a bye week, he's going to be a little bit more integrated into the offensive system. We know that Philadelphia, we've seen them earlier in the season. Certainly Stephon Diggs kind of torched them earlier in the year. Can they deal with two deep threats at a time? Can they deal with Lockett and Gordon both running deep at the same time? I don't know. Seattle doesn't know. Philadelphia doesn't know, but I hope we all find out. I think Seattle needs to test the top of this defense, see if they can go over the top, and they have the skill players to do that. And also, don't forget about DK Metcalf, okay? I don't know where the depth chart and where the snap counts are going to go. I don't know if basically DK Metcalf becomes the third receiver in this offense, but he was coming on quite well. The Seattle Seahawks have some weapons in the passing game. Not only Russell Wilson, it's not just him buying time and throwing deep. deep anymore to Doug Baldwin. They have legit players at wide receiver that can make things happen for themselves. It's going to be interesting, okay? The Eagles, they're going to need both tight ends. The book on Zach Ertz this year is just to play physical with him, try to bully him early in the game, take him out of his game. Now, Dallas Goedert, you can't do that to, in my opinion, and I think Dallas Goedert is showing himself as kind of the tougher of the two tight ends in the red zone as well. But Zach Ertz projects to have a very, very nice game. Seattle needs to limit him. That's a key for Seattle. They need to limit Zach Ertz in this game. The analytics are very, very close, as I mentioned before. Seattle just needs to take care of the ball. I think they're the stronger team. They're playing in Philly, and I know Philly is actually favored by 1.5 points here, but I think Seattle's the stronger team. They just need to avoid mistakes. And then Philadelphia, they will give up. If you're looking, you know, in play charting and where this this deficiency is for Philadelphia, I think they do give up some yards in the screen game. I think Rashad Penny could be a factor, but really I think it's more about, can Seattle stay patient with the run, and can they test over the top with Gordon and Lockett? I think that will do very well for Seattle and Seattle fans. Now for Philadelphia, the path to victory, okay, make Seattle one-dimensional. It's about that run game for me, right? This is what Philadelphia has been able to do all season long, make them one-dimensional as early as possible. Nelson Agholor, assuming he plays, he needs to catch the ball. He's been way too inconsistent in his career. He's got too much potential. You know, they need Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Agholor to both be factors in this game, so he needs to have himself a game. This is the type of matchup where he can do well, so he needs to do well. Find a deep weapon. Take deep shots. Alshon Jeffrey seems to be having a little bit of problem creating separation. I don't really even care about that. Just run him deep. You know, show the willingness to throw and take shots deep. If it's not him, put in, you know, some of your other guys there. Just find somebody to try to blow the top. Find some speed on the field and take shots. I don't care if they catch him or not. Just take the shots. It will have an effect and basically create more space earlier, or I should say closer to the line of scrimmage. Let's see. Alshon Jeffrey, I mentioned, analytically speaking, he could have a big game. He's in line to have a big game today. Or this weekend, he needs to have a big game. And then Philadelphia, I think they need to steal possession in this game, whether it's going for it on fourth down in the red zone, you know, not settling for a field goal, but being a little bit more aggressive. I think they do need to push the issue a little bit. And, you know, something that's not captured in these analytics is that this game is super important, really, for both teams. If, I mean, let's just say that Seattle loses, okay? If Seattle loses, they could potentially fall two games behind San Francisco going into week 13. That's not good. Even though that they beat San Francisco, 2 weeks ago or whatever it was, they can't fall two games behind, okay? I know they'll have one game left against them, but it's a huge game, huge game. And then for Philadelphia, if you lose this game, I mean, the wild card, you're already kind of losing that, right? But Philadelphia is a competitor for wild card if they can't beat Dallas. This is a big game for playoffs just in having that tiebreaker. And then on top of that, you know, you can't really go down. Now, Dallas has a really tough game against New England this week. Maybe they could afford to lose, but I think it's kind of like backs against their wall situation. I said this when Philadelphia played Buffalo a few weeks ago. It's a big game. And when Philadelphia, you know, plays in big games, kind of got to have it games. I don't know that this is necessarily got to have it yet, but it's damn close. Philadelphia is really good in these situations. I think it's going to be a playoff-like atmosphere. I think Philadelphia will come out with intensity. So this line, although, you know, if this was on a neutral field on any given Sunday, maybe early in the season, I would take Seattle. Just the need for Philadelphia to win and their ability to make things happen in those types of situations, you know, it gives me pause betting. Okay, I'm going to probably remove this from my board because I do like Seattle, like I said, analytically speaking. But Philadelphia, they just are, they reach another level when they feel like their backs are against the wall. Let's conclude this video now with fantasy football projections for both teams. Rocobot is my fantasy football algorithm that I wrote to spit out and help me make, emphasis on help me make decisions on my fantasy football roster and daily fantasy. But let's take a look here. I think Russell Wilson has a nice day passing. I do think he'll escape the pocket and get you maybe one of those types of games where he gets like 50 to 80 yards on the ground too. Philadelphia's run defense is so good that they're going to really need to keep him honest. I do think I would like to see them, you know, call some designed runs, and Russell Wilson's really good at sliding and not getting hit, so I feel pretty safe about that too. Okay, so I think Russell Wilson has himself a nice game. I think Carson is a start, potentially could get in the end zone there. I think that he's more likely than not to get in the end zone. I mentioned Rashad Penny. Kenny has a has an opportunity in the screen game. I'd like to see him used, and I'd like to see him beat this projection. I think he has a chance to, but I wouldn't rotate him in my daily fantasy or my fantasy football lineups. Tyler Lockett, and I have Josh Gordon there as a low projection. I really want to see him line up on the other side of the field opposite Lockett and just run him deep. I can't wait to watch this game to see what they do with Josh Gordon, but I'd love to see that. I mentioned DK Metcalf. You know, don't forget about him by any means. If Gordon wasn't here, I would have a huge projection on Metcalf. But as it stands, you know, it's really to me about snap count and how that, you know, these personnel are going to be used this week. I don't know how Josh Gordon is going to affect the targets for DK Metcalf. We don't know that because we don't have a big book of knowledge on that yet. I do like him, but I think it's a risk to play him. And I do think it's a risk to play Gordon at this point too, because we need to see how they're going to be used. Now, if you're a believer that Gordon's just going to be used the entire game, then go ahead and play him. I think he'd be safe in doing that. For me, I think it's too risky to play him either in my fantasy football or daily fantasy football lineup, so I'm going to just kind of punt on that one. And then Jacob Hollister, I like him this week. I don't know if he'll get in the end zone, but I think he'll get you the catches and yards that that will warrant a start. Defense and special teams, I do like Seattle as a start-worthy team this week. They're not my favorite defense, but that 7.0, that's a pretty good projection for what Rockobot spits out. That's generally in the top third of defenses, so I think you're fine there. Now for Philadelphia, fantasy football-wise, Carson Wentz is a fringe start. I don't love him this week, and it's because, you know, I want to see more from the Philadelphia wide receivers. It's hard for a fantasy football quarterback to excel when he's so reliant on two tight ends to move the ball. We saw it on Thursday Night Football with Jacoby Brissett needing Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron. When your receivers are banged up and when they can't create separation specifically downfield, it's just tough. It just is. The NFL is hard. Jordan Howard, I like him. I think he'll have a great game. However, you have to figure out, you know, Doug Peterson likes to rotate these backs in. They have Ajayi. Is he going to eat into Howard snaps? I don't know. Same thing I was talking about before with DK Metcalf and Josh Gordon, and how are the snap counts, how are the touches going to be distributed? I have the same kind of concerns with Jordan Howard and Ajayi and Miles Sanders. On this team, I think Miles Sanders is the best running back, but you know, you got to think about how these players are being used. In the game, I like them, and I think they'll be able to get yards. For fantasy, they're just a little bit too risky. I want more information before I put them in daily fantasy or fantasy football. That's my opinion. If I had to pick, I do think Jordan Howard can have a nice game if they stick with him. So you have to know, you have to basically guess what Doug Peterson is going to do. Is it going to be Howard? Is it going to be somebody else? But I think that up the middle running attack is going to be good. And my money's on Howard if I was going to bet on one of those guys. Now, Alshon Jeffrey, like I said, I think he will have himself a nice game. I think he will get in the end zone. Nelson Aguilar has to step up. He needs to beat this projection if Philadelphia is going to win. Zach Ertz, I mentioned, I think he's going to have a huge game. I didn't even use a third Philadelphia wide receiver. I think Dallas Goedert will beat this projection. I think he's going to go over 10. I think he's a very good bet to get in the end zone. And then Philadelphia's defense, although I think they're a strong unit, I don't like them against the Seattle Seahawks in this matchup. I have them as a 5.3. That is a sit for the Philadelphia Eagles defense. Like I said, I am very high on them generally. I just don't like them in this matchup. So there you go. That takes me through the game plan. If you like this series, I do a few games every week. I have the Baltimore Rams game out. I have a few others. I did the Colts and the Houston Texans. I did pretty well there, analytically speaking. So just check us out. Fantasy football, we do a lot of stuff. Check out our channel. Check out our Week 12 playlist, which is updated daily. Once again, please like and subscribe. If you're a fan of either team, or you think, you know, you're just a fan of the NFL and you think I'm missing the mark somewhere, just comment. Let's have a talk about it. I'd love to get your opinion. And once again, thanks for watching, and we'll catch you on another episode soon.